place, watch me steal the show. Higher ground, yeah, I'm rising fast. This is my moment, it's built to last. Keep the focus, keep the drive. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, helping you go from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Today, we have a special guest in the studio. Welcome to the show, Pamela Thompson.
I'm excited to be here, Rebecca.
I am so glad you're here, and I'm going to tell my audience about your illustrious background. So Pamela is passionate about supporting mission-driven women at a crossroads in life to navigate change without the burnout, just perfect for this show. We're all about overcoming burnout. She is the founder of Female Wave of Change in Canada, which is a member-based nonprofit. She believes feminine leadership holds the key to creating a better world. I love what Dalai Lama said, the world will be saved by the Western woman. That's exactly what you believe too. She is the president of Creative Life Coaching and Consulting. She is the author of two best-selling books. Her books are Learning to Dance with Life, A Guide for High-Achieving Women. And then her up-and-coming book is Truths and Contradictions, Life-Changing Experience in Afghanistan. And these books draw from her diverse experience across 5 continents. You're like a female James Bond. So tell us your story. How did you get to go across 5 continents, and how did you become so well-known and respected in the female leadership space? What is your origin story?
Okay, well, I guess I can start way back, Rebecca. When I was about 4, I knew in my bones that I would travel the world and be of service, but I didn't know. I was fascinated by people from different countries and cultures and beautiful things from different places. And I just knew in my bones that I would be of service in some way, but I have no idea what that would be. Fast forward, as you've mentioned, I've had the opportunity to live and work on 5 continents in conflict zones, including Afghanistan. Now, what happened with that is, I guess there were a number of things along the way. And, you know, it's like we all have different stories. So which one shall I tell? How did I get into feminine leadership? Well, and how did I get into doing what I'm doing now? I guess I have believed in the power of women and the strength of women. And certainly what happened is when I launched my first book, Learning to Dance with Life, A Guide for High-Achieving Women, I interviewed high-achieving women from 3 continents to validate what I saw as the key attributes of high-achieving women, and because I did a brain dump, if you will. And what I really noticed is in my work in different places and in interviewing women from different parts of the world, I realized we're really all the same, you know, and we have similar challenges and we have similar wants and needs. And I guess over time, initially I've actually had 4 businesses since the early 90s, Rebecca. And in the first business, it was very left brain, a little bit right brain.
What were the 4 businesses?
Okay. One was called InPro Consulting, and I designed and facilitated multi-stakeholder meetings and workshops.
Okay.
I also researched and wrote program and policy documents in the health field. So that was the main one. Then I did Global Village. There was a time in my life when I decided I wanted to go from domestic consulting to international. And so I ended up joining a consulting group, and they managed and consulted on international development projects around the world in a variety of sectors. And I became one of their health sector specialists. So I managed a big project in Pakistan and led the front-end implementation of another project in Nigeria. Now, getting back to after that, I founded my own company, Global Village Consulting, and that was the arm that really focused on the international work. And that's when I did my own one. And when I worked with the other consulting group for about 5 years, and then I did my own thing. And that led me to go to Afghanistan. And I'll give you a bit of a story about how I got there, because I think it might be
interesting. Yeah, how did you, like, I want to know about the five continents. Like, what kind of work helped you travel to five continents?
Sure. Well, initially, I used to work for Health Canada. Mm-hmm. And my boss was a policy person for the World Health Organization in the Euro office in Copenhagen. And she came back one day. And she said to me, Pam, I was just in Russia, and I was talking to these physicians, these male physicians, and they're doing this multi-stakeholder meeting, a multi-country meeting in Moscow. And this was like just after the Berlin Wall came down, Rebecca. And she said to me, Pam, they don't know what they're doing. You need to go and straighten them out. So she said, call this woman in Copenhagen and tell her that you're going to be the facilitator for this 3-day multi-country event for WHO. So I phone up this woman and I say, well, should we develop a small committee and then we could talk to the organizers in Russia? This woman said, oh, no, Pam, we'll just go a day early. We just tell them we've got it all sorted and you'll just do it. So there I was, facilitated multi-country meeting in Moscow just after the wall came down.
Wow. So how old were you when you did that?
I'm going to say, let me see. I have to do some math here.
Just approximately.
40.
Okay. Awesome. So, okay, that was Russia. Tell us about what were the other continents?
Okay. Before that, I'll scroll back a little bit. I ended up living and working in a little living and working in the mountains of northern Colombia, a little village 3.5 hours north of Colombia. My ex-husband's an international consulting engineer. So we went and took our 2 kids, 3.5 and 5.5, to live in this little village. And I ended up giving myself 3 months to learn Spanish. And then I reached out and ended up doing volunteer work for a peasant farmer, a campesino nonprofit. And it was really fun. I designed and facilitated this program that was called Semana de la Seguridad, which means safety week. But the program was aimed at children in grade 5, so boys and girls 9 to 11, to teach them about accident prevention in the home, school, and community using techniques like songs, stories, dances, puppets. And it was really fun, and I believe it was very impactful, because these kids teach their younger brothers and sisters, right? And then they'll grow up to be adults who have more understanding, and then they'll also influence their grandparents and their parents. So
we have America, you're from Canada, Russia.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, what are the other two continents? Okay. Africa. How did you end up in Nigeria?
How did I end up in Nigeria? That's when I was part of the consulting group, and I helped write the front end bid, and we got funding from the Canadian International Development Agency for that. It was a $20 million project over 5 years. It was a primary healthcare project in Nigeria. And I had 2 offices, one in the Muslim North and one in the Christian South. Fascinating project.
And then now that brings us to your most recent book. It's about Afghanistan. How did you end up in Afghanistan, especially during these crazy times that we're in? When were you there?
I was there initially for 13 months from October 2010 to November 2011. And then I went back for a short mission in 2015, only for a month. And then I also did virtual backstopping during just after 2011. So how did I get there? Well, at one point in my career, I got certified to be a life and business coach, and I started this, I had a network of coaches in Canada and the States, and we coach people through a variety of life transitions. And about 18 months in, I started to feel so restless, Rebecca, and I wasn't really, the ROI wasn't that great, but also I was really impatient that we weren't making a strong enough impact fast enough. Mm-hmm. And so I started to take this course called On Body Centered Coaching, because I wanted to get out of my head and into my body. And in the last class, via teleconference, the facilitator trainer asked for a volunteer, and no one was putting up their hand. So I said, well, I'll do it. So she said, okay, she wanted somebody to now demo this body-centered decision-making process. So she said, find a line on the floor and think about something that you really, really want. Now notice any fears or negative emotions that come up for you and imagine each one of them as a rock in a knapsack on your back. Now just feel the weight. Just feel the weight of all those rocks. Now release them and let them go and cross that line however you wish. You can leap across it, walk across it, run across it, and say aloud what you want. And Rebecca, I leapt across that line and I said, I want to play big. Had no idea what that would look like or what that was. In 2 weeks, I received an email asking me to throw my, inviting me to throw my hat into the ring for one of three positions in Afghanistan. And one had my name written on it. It was like senior technical advisor, strategic planning and performance measurement. So I ended up I spoke with my husband that night, and because I had wanted to work in Afghanistan for a while, but it was war zone, really volatile. But this was something I really wanted to do. And he supported me. He said it was originally a 9-month contract, got extended to 13. Anyway, so I threw my hat into the ring. By middle of September, I was part of the interview process. By middle of October, I was on the ground. So we're talking from mid-August to early September to September to buy, like in 2 months after I said I wanted to play big, wow. There was on the ground in Afghanistan helping the Ministry of Public Health develop their first strategic plan and building the capacity of internal teams to do planning. And so it was big because originally it was planned for 9 months, and to try to do that in the US or Canada and get through the various policy layers in a ministry, you would never do it. But I did it in Afghanistan, myself and my team. We did it.
So what was that like being a Western white woman in Afghanistan? Like, where did you live? What was the food like? Like, I'm curious, and I'm sure the people who listen to my show are curious what that experience was like.
I was living in a very small compound because there was a Canadian nonprofit that had gotten the money from CETA to implement this project, and then they hired consultants to work with them. It was one large house which I stayed in and another smaller one, and it was surrounded, just, you know what MASH used to look like, by those high walls and the barbed wire. That's exactly what it was like. There was a cage when you entered, and there were two guys with AK-47s in the cage. And you had to have your name down in a register to say you were coming to visit someone, or they, if you entered the cage, they could shoot you. I mean, that's where it was. I went to work each day in a bulletproof vehicle with an armed Afghan guard in convoy, followed by a soft skin. So that's a jeep that it doesn't have bulletproofing on it, with three guys.
By yourself in an armed car every day.
Yeah, armed guard work, followed by a jeep.
Who drove you?
The three guys with an Afghan guard that was trained by our heads of security. We had two heads of security.
So you didn't have any Canadian soldiers near you? You were just around Afghan?
Yeah. We had one Canadian, a colonel, who was actually living in our compound with us, but he was also building the capacity of the police force to do community policing. He was part of the project, but he was there. So there was a safe room, and within an hour of getting in country, getting into my compound, I was issued my flap jacket and my helmet, which fortunately I didn't have to wear all the time, but I kept under my bed, and I was oriented by the head of security to the safe room, which was a place you went if anybody tried to go over the wall. And it was equipped with, you know, obviously a toilet, water, dried food, and all those things.
Did you have to cover your hair and your face?
I didn't have to cover my face. I did cover my hair, and I wore loose clothing. So before I left, I bought some long tops and pants. And then when I was there, I got some more scarves and more long tops. Yeah.
Wow. And how long was it that you were apart from your husband?
Well, it was a 13-month contract, the first one. So I ended up negotiating a flyout in December of the first year, so a couple of months after I was there, a flyback. And so I was home for Christmas for 3 weeks, but then I went back and then I had 3 weeks of vacation in April. And so I met him in Turkey because there's a flight between from Kabul to Istanbul. So we did a tour in Turkey, and then I didn't see him till I came home then in November of 2011.
Amazing. Well, you're like a female James Bond, as I said before. You've had such an incredible journey. My name's Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We're taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We are going to cut to a quick commercial break, but don't go anywhere. Come back because we are going to talk about how Pamela has a framework called The Art of Change. And this is going to support you during a crossroads of life, during a transition, any big change or uncertain time that you're going through or anyone else, you're going to want to learn this framework. We'll be right back. Welcome back. My name is Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We're going from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. We have a coach, an author, a leader here who's been all over the world teaching leaders how to navigate change in uncertain times. You have a special framework called The Art of Change. Tell us, what is this framework, Pamela?
Well, I'd love to, Rebecca. Well, it is a five-step framework. It's actually based on the metaphor, life is a dance, and underpinned by the belief that embracing change is a creative process that opens us up to new possibilities. Now, as you may know, when we resist change, it actually has negative impacts on our bodies, our minds, our relationships, and our bottom line. So when we learn to embrace it, it opens us up to explore and see the bright side of a transition, which a lot of people find hard to believe, I will note. I think it might be helpful for the audience to define what I mean, the difference between a life change and a transition. A life change is something external and situational, something like a pink slip or a separation agreement, something you can see. And whereas a transition is something internal and psychological, the internal work, psychological work that we do to reorient and readjust ourselves to the new external reality. And what happens, Rebecca, is most people do the change, but they don't do the transition. So they end up repeating the same patterns in their life and remain unhappy and unfulfilled. And so this framework walks people through the process to help them understand how they respond, how they respond to change and why, and gives them tools to navigate so they don't keep repeating those same cycles, remaining unhappy and unfulfilled.
So what are the five steps of the framework?
Okay, the first step is shine the light. And that's when you explore how you respond to change and why. So Rebecca, do you want to play with me for a moment here?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going for a big change. I moved from LA to Cincinnati, so we can talk about that.
Wow. So I invite you to rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 10 in terms of how you typically respond to change. 1 being scares me to death, 10 being I thrive on it.
Probably an 8.
Yeah. Most people in leadership positions rate themselves about 8, 9, 10. So I'm going to ask you another question. When a change comes out of the blue, like something, you know, happens that you had no idea was going to happen as imposed on you, how would you rate yourself on that scale in terms of how you respond?
Probably a 9.
Oh, really? Interesting. Yeah, because a lot of people would go the other way. So tell me why you'd rate yourself a 9.
Because I thrive in a crisis.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're about the second person that I've asked that question to that has said that.
Yeah.
Everybody else usually says 5 or 6, right?
Yeah, I perform best under pressure for some reason, but yeah.
Okay. Okay, then. Anyway, so that's part of that process, okay? And then choose your dance. And that's
Shine Your Light is number one.
Shine Your Light, Choose Your Dance is the second one. And okay, that's when you choose the transition that you want to focus on. Because a lot of times, like you, some people could move and maybe they're starting a new position and maybe they get divorced, whatever it is, right? They often have more than one. But with this process, when I work with women, it's really important to just focus on one. Okay, you just choose the one that you want to focus on.
What is Shine Your Light? To rate yourself?
No, Shine the Light. No, shine the light is to explore how you respond to change.
Okay, explore how you respond.
And then choose your dance as you choose the transition you want to focus on.
Okay, so you choose your transition.
And then the next one is feel the rhythm and learn the steps. So I draw for this model, I've adapted on the work of William Bridges. He's an organizational theorist who, sadly, he's passed, who worked with people in organizations for over 30 years. And based on his work, he identified that regardless of the transition we go through, there are three distinct phases, an ending, a neutral zone, and a new beginning. Mm-hmm. And again, if you don't do the work, you get stuck in a phase and you remain unhappy and unfulfilled. So in this... Now I'm losing my spot.
He knows. This is amazing. Feel the rhythm. This is great. We're in the third
one. Feel the rhythm. This is feel the rhythm and learn the steps. So anyway, so when you feel the rhythm and learn the steps, you actually identify where you are on your what I call your transition journey. Mm-hmm. And so are you at the ending? Are you in the neutral zone? Are you in the new beginning?
So let's use my example. I just moved to Cincinnati. I'm just barely unpacked. I still have a couple things left to unpack. I had to end my life in LA and I had a going away party. I'm still getting my bearings in Cincinnati. I've grew up here, so it's not totally a new city. My mom's here. So where would I be in the ending, the neutral zone, or the new beginning? I would guess new beginning.
No, well, you're at the ending. You have to deal, you're at sort of the cusp of those two, but you need to do the work of the ending before you can move into the new beginning.
I agree. I have to move to LA. Honestly, like I'm grieving my condo. I'm grieving my lifestyle because I really loved LA, you know, but it was just time for a change. So do you have any advice or tips how to do the ending so you don't bring whatever energy into your new chapter?
Well, one of the things, Rebecca, that I have people do is to identify what they had to let go of. Ooh. So you said your condo, you said your friends, you mentioned a few things. So
the weather, the lifestyle, the culture.
All those things, right? The status, potentially, I don't know.
Yeah, there's more status living in LA than living in Cincinnati. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. So you identify all those things, right? And you also identify the lessons learned from that experience.
Yes.
Okay, so I encourage people to, you know, reflect and journal about these things. The next stage is the neutral zone, and that's where you take the leap. Well, you have taken the leap. You've actually done it. You've moved.
Yeah.
And that's the scary part, but that's also the creative space because you now can redesign your life however you want to.
I know. That's the exciting. I don't want the same life as I had before, so how do I make this chapter different? Because I could recreate the same schedule and the same everything as I had in LA. And this is my chance. I have a clean slate.
Yeah.
So what advice would you tell me or anyone else who doesn't want to repeat the same pattern? It could be a new city, a new relationship, a new job, like whatever change that you're navigating. Pamela is going to teach us how not to repeat the same thing.
I can't guarantee that you won't, but
yeah, but at least you can show us.
Yeah. The thing about this phase is to really, you know, it's really important to feel the change in your body and go through, there's different processes you can do to release. You know, there's a burning thing where you write some things, you know, on paper and then you put it in a bowl. You know, these came from indigenous ceremonies and you release and let go of people, of things, of beliefs. And then you really examine your life. And one of the things that I really encourage women to do is identify their top five core values. Because if you're not living a life in alignment with them, you're going to feel not right.
Mm-hmm.
So mine are like, One of them is making a positive difference. If I'm not doing something that makes some sort of positive difference in the world for a while, I notice it and I feel like out of alignment. Mm-hmm. The other thing is connection. It's important for me to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And if I don't have connection, you know, so creativity, it's important for me to use my creativity. So anyway, identifying your top five core values is really important. And I have some fun exercises about identifying your passions, because part of, you know, re-envisioning whatever that is, that new life, that new relationship, whatever it is, that new work is, it's really important to get creative around it and to identify what brings you passion. What things when you were a kid did you do that you don't do anymore? What could you, you know, what things do you do that you lose track of time in? You know, so again, building on those values, building on those passions, then taking time to actually create a vision board, however you do that. It could be digital, it could be whatever. And just really envisioning that new life that you want and what are the core elements of it.
Well, I'll tell you my five values.
Okay.
Love, joy, vitality, freedom, abundance.
There you go.
So build a life around those five values.
Yeah, totally, totally. And then the next one is the new beginning. And Yay. That's where you take action toward what you've envisioned in that second phase, right? And so ideally, you develop an action plan. That's where you get a little bit more left brain. And you mm-hmm. you set up, and you've done this. You've been in business for some time. Set up an action plan in terms of what you're going to do. And if you need other support, what that's going to look like, right? So when you feel the rhythm and learn the steps, you're starting this process. And then the fourth step is practice, 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 because you keep practicing, you keep moving through, you keep letting go. Sometimes we need to purge. When I did a massive downsize 8 years ago, my partner and I, he and I moved from the Okanagan Valley in the interior, quite a large house with a view of the lake, initially to an 850 square foot apartment before we actually bought a place.
Talk about serious purge.
No, it took me 2 years to actually go through a big steel box and purge anything, because we ended up buying a smaller place, a townhome that's like 1350, but still it was quite a bit smaller than the other one had, right? So yes, I had to massively purge, and I had to really, you know, really look at things. Does this bring me joy? Is this really something that I need, right? Or can I give it to someone else? And there's wonderful joy in giving it to someone else, or giving it to a secondhand clothing shop or the local church or whatever it is, right?
I totally agree. That has been the best part of this move, is I purged 10 garbage bags of clothes and countless other belongings. But my friend has two preteens, or one preteen and one teen, and they came over and I got to see them go through the clothes and see them pick stuff out. That was such a joy for me during this transition. But yeah, that is.
Totally. I get that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and then consciously share your dance with the world is step
five. So that's step five. So step four is practice.
Practice, practice, practice.
Okay. Practice, practice, practice. And then step five is consciously share your dance
with the world. What does that mean is when you go through a change in a thoughtful way, mm-hmm. and you learn to embrace rather than resist change, people around you notice. And mm-hmm. so you impact them. They notice it in your aura, in your energy, just the way you're living your life, right? So you're a positive role model for them. So yeah.
Wow. So that is the Art of Change framework. I love it. Go ahead.
Go ahead. And that's actually on my website. People can sign up for that if they want the frameworks. And it's a full guide. It's not just the five steps. It goes through.
So you have a full guide. And what is your website?
Pamela-Thompson.com.
Okay. Spell that out for the people listening on the radio.
Sure. Thank you. Pamela-Thompson.com.
Yay. All right. I'm going to download that guide, because I'm still doing my step framework, being that I just got here to Cincinnati. We are going to cut to a quick commercial break. My name is Rebecca Whitman, your host of the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. We're going from burned out to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. Come right back because I'm interviewing Pamela Thompson, best-selling author, leadership coach. Her specialty is navigating change in uncertain times. She is going to give us some amazing tips on how we can thrive and prevent burnout while we're going through change. We'll see you in a couple minutes. Welcome back to the Balanced, Beautiful, and Abundant Show. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman. We are talking about how to thrive during uncertain times, how to navigate change without burning out. So, Pamela, what are some practices that can help us thrive in times of uncertainty and prevent burnout?
Okay, well, the first one is prioritize self-care. And I know you're all about this one, Rebecca. And one thing that you can do when you wake up in the morning is say to yourself, how am I going to nurture myself today?
Write that down if you're listening. Question, how am I going to nurture myself today? Beautiful.
Yeah, that's just right. The other thing is when something comes at you out of the blue and you realize you're going to react, whether or not you're going to verbally react, but your body's going to go into fight, flight, or freeze. I encourage people to take three deep breaths in through their nose and out through their mouth like this. And when you exhale, you actually make a noise.
That feels great.
Yeah. What it does is it releases oxytocin, a hormone in your body, and it brings you to relaxation and inner peace. So that's a really helpful technique to use. The other thing that's really important is connecting regularly with nature. Mm-hmm. So I'm fortunate. I live like within 10 minutes walk of the ocean and 10 minutes walk of this beautiful park that was built in the 1800s. So I try to get out there every day, even if it's only for 20 minutes, because as you probably know, being in nature reduces your pulse, reduces your blood pressure, and increases actually the number of natural killer cells your body has. So it strengthens your immune system. So it's really important during times of stress and uncertainty to get out in nature, you know, and just take it all in.
You can combine those two techniques, right? You can go out in nature and do the three deep cleansing.
Totally you can.
Yeah.
The other thing is practice mindfulness. That's one of the things when I burnt out in 2012 is I studied mindfulness, and it's been really, really helpful. So one of the things you can do, there's a couple of techniques I teach people, and one is body scanning. So before you get out of bed in the morning, you actually scan your body from the top of your head to the tips of your toes, and you just notice if there's any place that you're holding tension or you're in pain. And a lot of times I find I don't even know it until I do this. And then what you do is then you breathe, Rebecca, into those places and release them. Release, you know, set the intention to release them. So that's really helpful, right? So the other one is mindfulness walking meditation. Do you know what that is?
No, tell us about it.
Okay, it's when ideally you go out in nature. You can do it in the house, but it's better to go out in nature. And what you do is you focus on all your senses. So instead of focusing on the argument you had with your partner earlier in the day or the performance review you're going to give to somebody that you're working with, you instead focus on the beautiful vistas that you're walking in. You listen to the birds singing. You smell the salt sea air. You hear the crunch of the leaves under your feet. And what will happen is you will inevitably start to think about stuff because that's what we do. And then I encourage you then to put those thoughts in a bubble or a cloud and let them envision them floating away from you. And then you go back to noticing what you notice in terms of all your five senses. So
that is the key to happiness. Past is depression. Being in the future is anxiety. But if you can use that mindfulness, those five senses to ground yourself in the presence, that's really where happiness is, don't you think?
Totally. Totally it is. The other thing is engage in creative activities. Because, you know, when it brings you joy, right? Think about something you did as a kid, or maybe something you've always wanted to do. Maybe you wanted to take piano lessons, but you never did. And then you start to do it and you just love it, even though you're not really very good. It just brings you joy, right? And we need more joy in our lives, particularly during times of intense change and uncertainty, right? We totally do. The other thing is clarify your priorities and get rid of stuff and people that you don't need in your life. Because if we have a whole bunch of stuff, we get overwhelmed. And during times of uncertainty and massive change, it's you're impinged from so many places. So, you know, I don't know who said it, but someone said that you're like the five people you most hang around with or spend time with. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to get really clear on the kind of folks you want to be with, people who are uplifting and joyful, not the negative Nellies of the world. And it may be really hard because it can be someone you've known for a long time, but you know, it's like they're negative all the time. You just don't need that in your life, right?
I agree. I think there's no such thing as neutral energy. Somebody's either like supporting you and cheering you on, or they're draining you and detracting from you, criticizing you, or just constantly infusing your life with negativity. And I encourage you not just to purge the things to reduce the clutter in your life, but to do a purge of toxic relationships and people. It's really hard. I know that you probably say the same thing to your clients, saying to just end it and say, I'll never talk to you again, but just distance, take some spiritual and mental distance from people that are energy vampires. Isn't that, what would you say to that?
Totally. I totally agree with you. Yes, Rebecca, definitely.
Yeah. And let's talk about health, because you've really done a lot of work in the health arena. Health and wellness is something that I'm really passionate about. What are some of your health and wellness practices that you have really, you know, felt like added to your energy or longevity?
That's a great question. Okay, one big one for me is incorporating daily meditation into my life. Mm-hmm. I used to think about doing it, whatever, but when I burnt out in late 2012, I took some time. And one of the things I started to do is Deepak and Oprah. Deepak used to do these 21-day meditations.
Yeah, they're great.
And then he joined with Oprah. So there was Deepak. So I have a whole bunch of those on my phone. So before I get out of bed every morning, and I used to hit the ground running. I was one of those people who hit the ground running. Now I meditate. I plug in and I meditate for like 18, 20 minutes. And I have that's part of what I call my morning practice, and I always do it. I just came back from 23 days in Nicaragua on vacation, and I was still getting down on my towel on the ground and doing my, you know, I was meditating before I get out of bed, and I was still doing my stretches. I have a stretch routine I do every morning, and when I'm home, I pull an oracle card. I speak to Great Spirit and the others, that's for whatever reason, and I ask what wisdom and what lessons, you know, what wisdom or guidance they'd like to share with me today. I pull the card. I've got sacred rebels cards. I can't even tell you, I've got about five different decks, and I just shuffle them, ask a question.
Before you get out of bed?
No. I get out of bed after I meditate.
You do the whole morning routine. Like basically you say you wake up, you do the 18-minute Deepak.
Yes.
And while you're still in bed.
Yes, and then I usually go and grab my coffee. Although I'm not drinking coffee these days, I'm drinking hot water with ginger. I've changed.
Wow, ginger coffee.
Yeah, you know what happened? I started to realize it wasn't tasting good anymore. I'm like, what am I drinking? I'm like a robot here.
Well, what about tea?
Later in the day, but no, I drink hot water with and I grate ginger, and it's so good.
That's so healthy. I'm like. In awe of you. Okay, so drink the hot water with ginger, then what?
Yeah, so then I go upstairs and I do my stretch routine, okay? Maybe 10 minutes, maybe eight to 10 minutes, and that includes yoga stretches as well, okay? And then I usually get on with my day. Or I go down and do the oracle thing, drinking the rest of my what is now, ginger and hot water. And so that usually takes about an hour. I also do yoga. I've been doing yoga since probably 2000 or before. I used to do it 4 to 5 times a week very intensely. I had my one hip replaced a couple of years ago because I've got osteoarthritis. So I only do it, I do it more like 3 times a week now, and for not as intense. But for me, that's really important. And when I'm feeling tense, I realize, oh my God, I just need to do yoga. This is so important for me. I also spend
your own yoga routine, or do you do like a video?
I do a video. I used to go to a club, and then when COVID hit, I obviously didn't. I started to go online, and now I do it online, and I haven't been back to the studio just because there's so many people and there's still a lot of bugs going around, you know, and the mats are close together, and it's not a hot room, but it's a warm room. So I'm like, and I like to be able to plan stuff my own way. And this way I can, if I feel at a certain point I want to do yoga, I just plug in, right, and do it in my office.
Okay. So is there more to your routine? Okay, go on.
No, that's, there's not more to my routine.
Okay. So one of the things that you teach your clients to do, which is amazing, is to celebrate the wins. Why is it so important for us to celebrate our achievements?
Because it brings joy. When you say to yourself, yay, I did it, instead of just checking it off your list, like the energy is so different. Like, just notice, checking it off my list, or yay, I did it. And do it with a group of people is really fun. When I do workshops sometimes, I think it's on my YouTube actually, I'm doing a workshop and I say, think about something you're really proud of yourself that you did today or within the last week. Now let's do this together, yay, 3 times. And it's very energizing, right? It's very energizing. So yeah, we need to do it more because a lot of us are high achieving or driven sorts of people. We need to inject more joy and more breaks into our lives. That's another way to take a break. Just do a few cheers, right? Or, you know, reward yourself. We have this wonderful place, this new, it's plunge pools. It's right in our inner harbor in Victoria where I live. And so that could be a thing, a way to reward yourself and a friend, your partner. And you go and they have these hot saunas, 3 different types of hot saunas, and then different plunge pools. And right. You just go and reward yourself doing something like that.
Yeah, I love it. So let's talk about your book. What is it called? When is it coming out? And how can we get it?
Well, thank you very much for that opportunity, Rebecca. I appreciate it. It's called Truths and Contradictions, Life-Changing Experiences in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. It's launching, fingers crossed, it's launching on Amazon in multiple markets on April the 8th, 2025. Mm-hmm. And the book, the first part of the book is based on stories and experiences I had, both the scary ones and the funny ones, when I was living and working in Afghanistan. And so that was 2010 to 2011 and 2015. The second half of the book is based on in-depth interviews I did with Afghan colleagues and their friends about what it was like to grow up in Afghanistan and be there during key historic events like the Taliban the first time, the second time, and the Russian invasion. It was fascinating to do those interviews because when I lived there and you're working, you're full on, you don't have time to delve into people's personal lives. So I did these interviews in 2024 and they were really so fascinating. And my why in writing this book was to dispel myths about Afghans, Afghanistan, and Islam, because there's so many myths around about all those three things. And also to shine the light on the incredible courage and resilience of the Afghan people. Because Rebecca, as you mentioned before, I have had the privilege to live and work on 5 continents. And yet the Afghans and Afghanistan really got under my skin. They're so warm. They're so they're so humanitarian. People, you know, don't, you know, obviously the people that I work with are different from the ones who are in power now. But yes, they're total. So I really, anyway, so that's, I was really called to write this book. And I didn't
know that because I feel like certain cultures are kind of villainized or, you know, demonized by the media because they're thought of as, you know, less than, or the way they treat their women or their religion. And, you know, to show the humanity of the Afghans, I think people would be really touched by that. So I think you guys should all go out and get her book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's interesting because I also have another guide related to lessons learned from living and working on five continents. And in that guide, I talk about the importance of embracing our shared humanity. Because what I've noted, Rebecca, is living and working in different places is that we're pretty well all the same. Mm-hmm. We all want to be loved, respected, valued, belong, and most of us care about family. So imagine, just imagine if we viewed everyone, irregardless of their skin color, their ethnicity, their religion, their culture, through that lens, if we just saw them all as the same. I mean, we wouldn't have war. We might have disagreement, but we wouldn't have open conflict. And instead of judging people, we would be curious about them. Isn't that curious? Why do they do that? I'd like to understand that better rather than what the goodness, why do they do that? Or making these blanket stereotypical statements that all Muslims are terrorists. They're surely not. Mm-hmm. They're surely not. And the ones that I worked with and interviewed, they show their humanity and they all want to make a positive difference in the world. And you know, the other thing I'll just share quickly is, if I may, is the reason the book's called Truths and Contradictions is because of my why, but also I have a chapter on truths and contradictions. And what I do is identify a number of myths. And then I cite interviews with my people. What I did with the people I interviewed, what I did is I chose to write through Minerva, who is the muse I wrote through in my second book, The Exploits of Minerva. And the reason I did that is because she's autobiographical, but she also has this special playful energy. And the people I interviewed, I wanted to protect their anonymity, right? Preserve their anonymity. So I changed all their names. So in order to change their names, I changed my names and wrote through Minerva as well. And what was I going to say in this? In interviewing them, I lost my train of thought. It was just, it was just really.
We're just talking about the shared humanity.
Yeah, the shared
common myths of Afghans and how.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The truths and contradictions parts.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things. So I set the chapter up and I say, I leave it to you, the reader, to decide what's a truth or what's a contradiction. Example is related to women and not and education. Did you know that Muhammad's wife was a businesswoman? Did you in the Quran, it does not say men should control women. It says that men and women are equal. And it doesn't even say that women should be veiled. It said men and women should dress conservatively. There's all these things that are going on.
I'm going to have to go get this book because I had no idea. I thought it was, you know, part of it that women were like second class citizens. So this has been so enlightening and thought provoking. I know you guys are going to want to keep in touch with Pamela Thompson. So how can people, we already talked about your website, your book is on Amazon. Where can people find you on social or should they email you?
They can find me on social on LinkedIn and Facebook, primarily LinkedIn. And also they can email me at pam@creativelivingcommunity.com. That's an old URL. pam@creativelivingcommunity.com.
Fantastic. Well, everybody, thank you so much for being part of the Balanced, Beautiful, Abundant community. I'm your host, Rebecca Whitman, taking you from burned out and overwhelmed to balanced, beautiful, and abundant. This is a show that is supported by our community. So please share the show with a friend and let them know that they can achieve success without burnout. And until we meet again, keep your vibe high and magnetized. Bye, everyone. Level